This is the B-side of the record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
I'm Marcy Silman. A small town in coastal British Columbia says no to a proposed oil pipeline terminus. It's just one story making headlines in Canada. Les Lane covers provincial affairs for the Victoria Times columnist, and he's stepping in for Vaughn Palmer this week. Hi, Les.
Hi, Marcy.
Nice to speak with you.
Thank you.
The proposed Northern Gateway pipeline would bring 500,000 barrels of oil a day from the Alberta tar sands to the coast of British Columbia, from there to Asia. The tiny town of Kitimat said no this week. What happened?
This has been sort of occupying our attention for a couple of years now. The big bottleneck of oil, there's been huge efforts to get Canadian heavy oil to Tidewater somewhere or other and then just make a huge fortune on it by selling it offshore to China. That involves a pipeline from Alberta through to the coast, or the north coast of BC, and that's been a hugely controversial issue. So the proposed terminus for this pipeline is Kitimat, 5,000 people, a very remote little town. They have been neutral on this all the way through, and they decided to just put it to a vote to see what's going on. The vote was held on the weekend, and 58% of that town turns out to be against the general concept, pipeline, marine oil terminal, what have you. A pretty conclusive finding, I think. They got 60% of the vote out, 3,000 votes, 1,800 against, 1,300 for. So people have been chewing this over for the past several days.
But does this vote hold any real weight?
No, it's a plebiscite's the correct term. It's a non-binding plebiscite. It's just a simple expression of opinion. It doesn't have any legal weight. There's nothing binding on council or any other government, but it's still a lot is being read into this because there's no question how hard the Enbridge, the pipeline company, worked to get the result they wanted. They've had people on the ground in Kitimat for months on this campaign, for years actually in northern BC, selling the whole concept. And the grassroots, the neighborhood people, the environmentalists were equally hardworking in terms of getting their vote out as well. So the both sides felt that there was an awful lot at stake here, whether it was binding or not. They worked very hard to get their votes out. And at this point, it looks like the no pipeline people won.
It's one of several oil and coal projects slated for the Pacific Coast in Washington, Oregon, and in BC. In Washington state, voters recently elected four conservation-minded commissioners to the Whatcom County Council. This Kitimat vote seems like a similar kind of example of local opposition to big oil, big coal. How do you think that the Kitimat vote helps shape the conversation at the local level in BC?
Well, I think even though it's not binding, I think it's a real marker in terms of just the people most directly affected. This pipeline and terminal would completely transform a very small town. I think their interest in this issue outweighs the actual weight they have in it overall, in that they have to live with it. But still, when you back up and look at these things on both sides of the border, there's this huge national imperative to make this happen, to get oil to Tidewater one way or the other. And county officials and little towns voting on this, I think people they're forced, obviously, by democracy itself to take notice of these votes. But the weight that you give to it is still, I think, on Canada at least, going to be overshadowed by the federal cabinet. They've been very definite in pronouncing this as an imperative for this country. They want it to happen, and I think it'll probably not change any minds at that level, but intensify the effort to persuade a few hundred people in Kitimat to change their minds.
I'm talking with Les Lane of the Victoria Times columnist. Also this week, increased scrutiny for British Columbia's agency in charge of workplace safety. I guess the Labour Minister, Shirley Bond, says changes are needed in order to restore public trust after news that officials mishandled an investigation into a mill explosion that killed two men in 2012. Can you walk us back to what happened?
Yeah, An extraordinary set of circumstances. January 2012, a mill in northern BC just exploded. Two people dead, 20 injured. The WorkSafe investigations unit moved in, investigated the accident for 3 months. 3 months later, exactly the same thing happens. It's this very dry sawdust that's produced when you're milling the timber that's been killed by the mountain pine beetle that's been blamed for these accidents. There was two separate investigations. They both presented findings to the prosecutions branch in BC. And the prosecutions branch a few months ago on the first one said, this investigation is just unsatisfactory. We can't do anything with it. This week, they reached the same conclusion on the second explosion. The WorkSafe wanted to lay some regulatory charges against the mill owner, and the criminal justice branch says, we can't do it because you're just not investigating up to snuff. So it's prompted an enormous resentment, I think it's fair to say, in both towns, as grieving families, some very seriously injured workers. They want a little bit more than this. So there's a big revamp of the work safety regime in BC that's just getting underway.
Interesting. How long is it going to take until that is revamped?
They've named a special administrator to wade in and spend the next 3 months writing this thing, and I think they're going to overhaul their investigatory capacity and their procedures. These people are kind of going in and investigating. I think they're much more used to doing run-of-the-mill safety inspections and writing little warning notices rather than issuing kind of search warrants and reading people their rights and proceeding in a very much more traditional kind of hard-nosed investigation mm-hmm. sort of way. So they're going to have to, I think, basically step up their act. And a report is expected by July 1st on how that's going to be made to happen.
And finally, Les, a case weighing equal rights against religious freedom at a private evangelical university filed at the Supreme Court of BC this week. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Trinity Western University in the suburbs of Vancouver. It's a very small evangelical Christian university. They've been thinking about opening a law school there for a couple of years. They have a covenant that every student and faculty member of the university signs. They respect the sanctity of marriage and pledge to not indulge in any kind of sexual activities that would violate the bond of marriage, which is fair enough up to a point, and then the phrase bond of marriage between a man and a woman. That's perceived as essentially banning gay sexual activity on the campus, and that has a lot of gay rights activists very upset. And their concern runs headlong into the concept of religious freedom. So it's been a kind of an intriguing debate. It's been ebbing and flowing for a couple of years here, and it came to a head with the decision this week by the Law Society to recognize an actual law school at that institution. So a couple of gay rights activists have hired some very prominent lawyers and are going to take this case head on.
Well, that'll be interesting to watch. Les Lane covers provincial affairs for the Victoria Times columnist. Great to speak with you this week, Les.
Nice to talk to you, Marcy.
We talk about Canadian politics every Wednesday on The Record here on KUOW Seattle.